Gonna welcome in John Nelson from Atlanta. How you doing, John?
Getting ready for MLS playoffs. The qualification round is tonight. We've got tonight, we've got tomorrow, and then get the pedal down because it's going to come fast and furious before Zombie CONCACAF Champions League in about 3 weeks' time. But news out of Miami means it might be a tall order for Inter Miami coming into tonight.
And yeah, I was going to bring that up too because I saw like both Higuain brothers, not just one, both of them out. So I don't know. Does Nashville now become the favorite, John?
Well, I mean, Nashville's been the favorite the entire time just because of the notion of game day travel and all that, and also being the higher seed coming in. Remember, you're also losing the way that it was presented by Michelle Kauffman of the Miami Herald. Both Higuains are out. It was presented as two starters, possibly three, as many as five players. So you have two that are not a part of game day roster, and you have the two Higuains and Leandro Gonzalez Pires. So that creates issues in offense and at the back. And so for Inter Miami, they've had issues at the back anyway. And that means that you're going to have to twist things around a little bit more. And your back might be a little bit more porous than what we've seen with Diego Alonso so far this season. I look at Nashville. Nashville has been my favorite in this particular matchup all along just because of what we've been able to see from Nashville this season. Walker Zimmerman was named MLS Defender of the Year. And, you know, for some strange reason, and I don't know why it was, but Joe Willis, the keeper for Nashville SC, was not a part of the discussion for Goalkeeper of the Year. He would be my all 11. Best 11 keeper of the year. He was not in the discussion at all, didn't finish in the top six in voting, considering what we saw from Nashville this year. Nashville, with Gary Smith, started out very defensive, tried to get their sea legs, but they were built through the spine. And when you have an experienced back that includes really a spine that includes Dax McCarty, Walker Zimmerman, Dave Romney, and you've got Joe Willis in net, that gives you some room to work with here. And as the news came out about Inter Miami this morning, Inter Miami has now gone to a plus 270, as I put my crunching the numbers hat on, a plus 270 underdog going to Nashville. Nashville started out at about a 160. They're down to a plus 115. So it's going to be a tall order for Inter Miami tonight.
And Carmen, like looking at Inter Miami, you got Matuidi, Pizarro. Are these the two that you want to rely on to score goals for you? Like, is Nashville just going to come in, know that counterattack and win?
I mean, yeah. There's not much to offer for Inter Miami. But they're used to it. They've played most of the season with Matuidi and Pizarro, and Pizarro hasn't really proved himself to be that difference maker just yet. But I think that you're a coach coming into the game, and for me, I could take pride in saying that I could organize my team for a nil-nil game anytime and get that opportunity maybe to score that one goal, and as Nashville has for many, many, much, much big part of the season. So I think that's it's obviously going to change the way they play, but if it does, it should help the way they play maybe a little more. Maybe they should stay within their limits. Inter Miami can stay within their limits just as Nashville has all year. Nashville's not necessarily comfortable dominating a game. They haven't dominated a game with the ball, and they haven't dominated chances. They found ways, and they are going to be very dangerous on restarts and dangerous in encounter situations, and dangerous when the ball gets into wing channels. But I still think it's going to be a close game because unless Miami doesn't do what it's going to take to keep scoreless as long as possible and find those opportunities, which they will. But they haven't been a team that done that, that does has done that all year. They've tried to play and take the game to the opposition, and sometimes successfully, most time unsuccessfully. So I think that if the most best thing they can do is not make Nashville comfortable without the ball. So I think they might be more prone to giving the ball more to Nashville, and then that's not their comfort zone right then and there.
And looking on to the other match, which is surely going to get Thierry Henry up, running on the sidelines, probably want to take his jacket off and go on the field. They're in their playoff game, and I think a lot of people were surprised that they even got in. It was looking rough for a bit, but New England, this is a tough managerial test for Thierry Henry. John, I'll start off with you. Is New England the favorite to go through here?
I think they are. I mean, you look at juice boxes again, and New England's a minus 245. Montreal has grown this morning to be north of plus 600 to get the win. They were at one point earlier this morning, they were at a plus 500. Now they're up above 600. And I know that you're looking at two factors here. I know that you're looking at the number of wins that New England had at home this year, and that number is that many, too. But they had five draws, so you end up with 7 results out of 10 for your games at home in Foxborough. And I look at Montreal, and honestly, I just think that Montreal ran out of gas. And it was something that you look at with a Vancouver, with a Toronto, and with Montreal. When do you run out of gas? For Montreal, they're offensively challenged to begin with. You can only take Boyan can only take you so far. And when you back into the playoffs, not getting a result in 6 of your last 7, I think that it creates a tall order for Montreal here. It's probably going to go a little longer than folks may think. I think that New England gets it done in regulation, but it wouldn't surprise me if it went longer than that just because of Montreal trying to gum up the works, possibly send it to penalties and come out of there with a result.
Yeah, Carmen, same. Like, you're looking at Thierry Henry here as a manager. Do you think he's going to be outmatched here?
I mean, I'm not. Well, obviously, it's a reset button. I mean, they've had some time off to look at things, but I think that his personnel decision making has to be efficient and useful. You know, Piet has found himself sometimes on the wing, and the one decision that he's made all year, it's the goalkeeper, Clément Diop. We played against him against York 9, and there was so much insecurity with the feet, with every part of his game, and he got rid of a solid keeper in Evan Bush to go with Diop, and I just don't think that – I think that he's going to be massive in this game. Massive in his consistency, massive in making the big save at the right time, and massive in organizing the team in front of him. I think Montreal better be prepared to deal with droves of attacks from New England. And in knowing Bruce Arena and his mentality, he's not there to make this a close game. He wants to absolutely annihilate them. And that could work into their hands because we know that, you know, Boyan could find that ball in counter situations and then find Quito going forward. But it's going to be about those other 8 players doing the work behind the ball, whether he lines up in a 5 system in the back. But again, I think the biggest protagonist is going to be the goalkeeper for Montreal. Diop has to be better, has to be solid, has to make the big save when they need it, and has to distribute well when they need it. And he's been mediocre at all that stuff. So, and Thierry Henry's decision-making on players of where and how and when, and it might not be the most popular decision or the best player that plays this game. It's got to be the player that fits the role and understands that this is going to be a New England team that's going to get forward, wants to get wide, wants to get high, wants to be direct, wants to play early balls through lines, and it's going to be they're going to deal with a lot of attacks, that's for sure.
Yeah, the biggest thing, and Coach really hit it on the head for me when it comes to Clément Diop, is his distribution. He's unsure at times. He's not putting enough starch behind the ball if it's thrown out at a 45-degree angle out to the wings. And he's putting it in places that creates issues for Montreal having to defend off of a quick turnover. If the opposition ends up getting either the first ball or being aggressive enough to get the second ball and creating a quick transition opportunity, Diop's distribution to me has been an absolute problem this year. And it's something that I would be looking at if you're a fan of either side, because if Diop's distribution early on creates opportunities for New England, it could be a really long night for Montreal.
Yeah, I agree. And even Carmen, when you're bringing up about the York 9, like I remember watching that there and just seeing like he's unsure at times. He makes a lot of risky plays. And then York 9, they even took advantage of that last year. We saw Telfer. So I think if he's in a similar position right here, I think New England, they're just going to capitalize on that. That's why, like, I agree with what the numbers are there, that New England should be an overwhelming favorite in this game. But looking on to Orlando City, NYCFC, this was another interesting one just based on Orlando's turnaround. We saw what MLS is back. They kind of proved that they're legitimate in this season. So, John, do you think that we can see NYCFC going home early?
Or you could see the other because of their run of form coming into the playoffs. And this game, once again, with juice boxes being put out here, it's about as even as you can get. I mean, 155 to 160, both sides. I know that a lot of folks, and really, you could look at 2020 being what it is and sit there and say, well, okay, Orlando City will win the whole thing because it would be the most bizarre and the most 2020 thing humanly possible, never having made the playoffs, and sure, why not be a favorite at home? But you look at Orlando City as they were working their way into the playoffs, and you look at they got found out a couple of times. NYCFC, to me, seemed to hit their rhythm, especially offensively. If you look at the last match they had against Chicago on Decision Day, where it was just a game that was absolute bananas, and you ended up with pretty much, you know, PS4 or FIFA 21 play where it's just like, okay, no defense, throw it wide open. You pull the governor out of the golf cart and you see what NYCFC can do offensively. And I think that that might be a problem for Orlando City at the back. I think that really you could be getting into a shootout here. And I think that if you get into a shootout, I think it benefits NYCFC because – yes, I know that you look at Orlando City and you see Nani, you see DK, you see Mueller, you see Pereira. All of that offense is great, but I think that Orlando City might be a little bit more found out at the back. And I think that that, with NYCFC's current run of form, could create issues for Orlando City coming into this match. Would not surprise me if NYCFC came out with the Duke here.
Yeah, and Carmen, like, you brought there the – run of form. As a coach, when you have a run of form like that, and it goes on, you see the season ending, is it a little bit disappointing that the playoffs don't start right as you're in that run of form? Or do you think that maybe NYCFC, it could affect them that they had a little bit of a break?
Yeah, maybe, but I mean, I agree 1,000% with John. The rhythm and the pace of play, it wasn't about accident that they destroyed Toronto FC. That was a game where, yeah, Toronto FC probably wasn't at their best, but NYFC was a fantastic team with the ball, getting forward, movement without the ball, just on in sync and coordinated and very good winning it back when they lost it, and very good pressing team. I think that I think that's going to be a massive, massive performance indicator for Orlando. Are they going to find ways to break the press? And when they do, through the number 10, Pereira, are they going to find ways to get attacks through that breaking of that press? And are they going to deal with the pace of the game and deal with the moments where New York FC, and you saw it against the Red Bull as well, they were just the ball movement and the pace and the timing of movement was just fantastic. And I think that they're one of the favorite teams in the East. Obviously, Philadelphia has established themselves as the best. And Toronto FC still has the best players. But I do think that NYFC has a different level. And we've saw it a first time, a few times. And I think if they can reach that level, and I think they will, especially early on, I think they're definitely going to take care of Orlando.
And going on to the West here, there's a rivalry brewing there, Portland FC Dallas. Looking at, I guess, how stylistically these two match up, Carmen, I'll ask you this first. Is Portland, like, are they out of that range where they could be an MLS contender, or is this maybe have one more year left in it?
Portland? I think Portland's still an MLS contender right now, for sure. And you've seen the emergence of their best players, and it's not about one player. You know, Ibosi's come out and scored big goals for them. They find ways to win in different ways. I think that they're definitely a contender, and I think that Dallas is going to have to deal with a lot from them, and they have find different ways to win. They win by defending properly. I still think that they have one of the best midfields in MLS still, just by work rate and by tenacity, and just a team that you don't want to play against. And I think that Dallas is in for a not only a tough test but a tough day.
And John, too, like Diego Valeri, you've seen him. He's been in MLS a long time. Do you think he's still got a few more years left in him?
Yeah, well, don't ask him that question because he'll tell you the answer is yes. But I think that where Portland is concerned, I think that Gio Savarese consistently should be in the conversation for Coach of the Year, considering what he does up there in Portland. FC Dallas, you know, Luchi Gonzalez has done tremendous things. And once again, with FC Dallas, with their academy, at one point late in the regular season, you saw three academy guys out there for FC Dallas. And I want to say they were all under the age of 18. So the build that we're seeing from FC Dallas is part of the consistency of the program there. But with Dallas, honestly, they are this show's particular version of the MLS Forrest Gump box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. You could get the team that absolutely destroys Houston Dynamo, or you could get the team that just absolutely lays an egg, and you have Frank O'Hara challenging Luchi Gonzalez once he's being pulled off after 60 minutes, and Luchi Gonzalez forces Hara to shake his hand, and they do that on the touchline. So I just think in general it's going to be a long day for FC Dallas in this matchup. I think that Portland gets the Duke here, especially once again you're talking travel. And travel to me is that number five intangible that you always talk about. Offense, defense, special teams, whatever your fourth category is, and the intangibles. For me, the intangible in these matchups is going to be travel. How far out is it going to be? How is it going to impact the club? And how is it going to translate into having to do something quickly, having to travel basically half the country to get from Dallas to Portland in this matchup? I think that Portland wins it comfortably just because – I don't know what FC Dallas team is going to be there, and I know what Portland team is going to be there.
And looking at, like, one match we didn't cover last week extensively is Columbus and the New York Red Bulls. That was a final one. Looking at Columbus, they're a team, it's a nice story that they got in there playing relatively well, but the New York Red Bulls have been a team for years now that have kind of underachieved. When Bradley Wright Phillips was there and they were setting their records, they didn't win it. So it was kind of like the LAFC situation. And like, John, I'll ask you this first. If the Red Bulls are outclassed in this game, what kind of changes do you, like, they make after that?
Well, and that's the question. I mean, the biggest question coming into this game against Columbus, and I've got Columbus winning this one, it won't be the prettiest game in the world just because we don't know which Columbus team is going to show up. Is Darlington Nagbe healthy? How many minutes can he give you? How many minutes can Lucas Zelarayán give you, knowing that if you lose, you're out the door? Gerhard Struber is going to coach his first game as Red Bulls head coach in this game. All the visa issues were taken care of. He's coming over from Barnsley, and he's now going to be head coach. They took the academy coach, and he's not a part of this process. He's back to doing his academy material for Red Bulls. My largest question is, and you assume that there's been communication between Struber and the players just to get game plans together and everything. How do you avoid that "hello, my name is Gerhard" moment? I mean, because that's literally the only thing that's there. Struber, when he comes to the United States this week, that'll be the first time that he will have seen his players in person. I know that today is different when it comes to coaching and administrating and all that kind of stuff, but you're going to be with your guys on the touchline for the first time in Columbus on Saturday afternoon. That, to me, could present itself to be a bit of an issue because you don't know communication. You don't know how Gerhard Struber wants to orchestrate from the touchline. You don't understand, you know, his hand signals. And I know, Coach, that this is something that you see with other coaches. When someone's out there for the first time and you're out there with a group for the first time, that communication barrier could turn into a big negative, and I see that happening here unless there's been a lot of a quick course in learning Struber's sign language and commands coming into this game with the crew. I think it could be a long day for Red Bulls, Coach.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all of that. I think that if Struber, it's a good manager at this point, needs to leave it up to the team. He needs to sit back, watch, set a standard motivate and set a standard of play that they need to be. But he hasn't been involved in that whole process to get to this point. So, you know what? Understand that. Trust your players. Trust that they can get the job done. And you know, they may be motivated too. So there's little ways to tweak this situation where he can be a great manager and motivate by doing nothing, by doing little. But if he wants to establish himself right from the beginning and style of play and pressing and all the tactical things, it's not going to happen. It's just not realistic for it to happen. So sit back, believe in your team, believe in your players, do those moments of motivation and hopefully they'll get a result for you. And there is no for you because they don't know him really. So he needs to understand all these things and he could use this situation to be a very big motivating and carrot for them to move forward.
Yeah. And like Carmen too, like he is getting thrown in there like that. Do you think the academy coach, you should have just let him run with the playoffs, see how it goes, and at the end of the year, bring him in, or is this the right call?
Well, I think the incoming manager should be have a little foresight to keep this involved or have enough of a sample to say, okay, this guy has connected with the group or he has not connected with the group. This guy makes the group better. This guy, they're kind of not confident with him. So he should understand what the atmosphere is like. And so I think that's all part of intuition. And I mean, when you get to that level, to the levels where he's coached, he must have that intuition. So if he makes this about himself, this could go to the poops. But if he makes this about the group and trying to get the best out of them for the group, he might keep that academy coach in I think that it would be the healthiest approach to what's happening.
Agree there, and good luck for him. He's getting thrown in. What better way to make your debut than a playoff game when everything's on the line on a team that has underachieved? So best of luck to him on that. That's the MLS portion.